As we mentioned, variety is the mother of enjoyment. So instead of rain, it's fog. Seattle is such an enjoyable place.
Oh, with sun also there.
Where? That's a tree. That's not the sun. You've seen too many trees. Okay, so we're going to now conclude by discussing verses 4 through 8 from Canto 1, Chapter 1. Abruptly, the flow of the invocation ends, and suddenly we find ourselves in the text, where Shaunaka and the sages of Naimisharanya meet with Sutta Goswami, or they begin hearing from him. He apparently is in their assembly, and they begin inquiring from him and hearing from him. Just like that, it just moves from the invocation into the action. And these verses, 4 through 8, they're a group. It's something like first chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, like setting the scene, first chapter, because Bhagavad Gita, as we just heard, it's in Bhishma Parva section of Mahabharata. And so to prepare us for receiving the transcendental discussion between Krishna and Arjuna, we're introduced to the scene. So that's what part of what this section is doing. Here's the scene. Naimisharanya Forest. Sages. Sutta Goswami. And within that setting the scene, there's primary function is describing. Can we close the back door? Thank you. Describing the qualifications of a speaker and the receiver of Srimad Bhagavatam, because in the invocation verses we heard the glories of, and now who is a qualified transmitter of that message and who is a qualified receiver of that message. And in these five verses, there's a foundation set that we'll find within the whole of the first canto. So I'm saying it's a principal element of the first canto to very clearly understand what's the qualifications of a speaker, what's the qualifications of a receiver. Again and again, without so many situations where the speaker and receiver qualifications are identified, so that we can know who's a qualified speaker and how can we become qualified receivers. This is a Purana. It's within the context of real history. It's not imaginative history. But we're given lessons. How-to lessons through the example that's being presented in the history. So we're going to spend some time focusing on that. So the first verse reads, translation, once. It's like once upon a time. So once. In a holy place. In the forest of Naimisharanya, great sages headed by the sage Shaunaka assembled to perform a great 1,000-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. So few things about the sages and about the place and about the purpose of what they were doing. In the translation, Prabhupada has translated Svargaya Lokaya. We know what Svarga is and we know what Loka is. So, Svargaya Lokaya. It can have two meanings. The meaning that Prabhupada has taken is that Svargaya means the Lord who is worshipped in Svarga. Unto that Lord who was worshipped in Svarga. And is something like another name of the Supreme Lord, Urugaya. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that in his commentary. Urugaya is he who is greatly praised. Gaya, Urugaya, he who is greatly praised. So Svargaya is he who is worshipped and praised in Svarga. Svargaya. Praised in Svarga. And their intent is Svargaya Lokaya, to achieve the abode of the Lord by Kunta. And that's how Prabhupada has made this translation. There's another reading that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions, and that is that the sages, we know from later in the Bhagavatam, in Canto 1, Chapter 18, they speak about their previous disposition to sakkam karma, or performing karmakanda rituals. And in the goal of karmakanda rituals is Svargaya, to attain heaven. It's prosper now and attain heaven later. So Svargaya Lokaya. But because they were somehow greatly fortunate by coming in contact with Sutta Goswami, who had heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami's association brought them to the position where they gave up sakkam karma. Not even sakkam bhakti, but just some sakkam karma. They gave up all of that and took shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Here's the verse. It's 118.12. You let us, blackened by the smoke at this uncertain sacrifice, drink the intoxicating nectar of the lotus feet of Govinda. They had several intentions. One very clear intention was to neutralize the influence of the age of Kali, because they're great sages. They knew by scripture, by astrological calculation, and by actual history, Krishna has left. So that means things are going to go down. Kali Yuga is beginning. Kali Yuga is horrific. Let us do something for the benefit of others. So what did they know how to do? They knew how to do yagyas. So they gathered together at Naimisharanya to do a 1,000-year yagya to diminish the negative influences of the age of Kali. And we'll hear in a moment why they chose Naimisharanya, but that was their intention. The welfare of others. So it was the welfare of others, diminishing the influence of demoniac forces in the age of Kali. They were doing what they knew how to do for that purpose. They were also interested in upgrade to the heavenly planets from the pious activities accrued. They would gain that entrance into Svargaya Lokaya. Later on in this same chapter, 1121, they say, "Knowing well that the age of Kali has already begun, we are assembled here in this holy place to hear at great length the transcendental message of the Lord, and in this way perform sacrifice for the Lord." So that's the transition that they underwent. But initially, they say, the only benefit we were getting before from performing the yajna was our face was becoming blackened by the smoke. In other words, zero benefit. That was the austerity of our faces being blackened by the smoke, but that was the only benefit. No real benefit, because in Kali Yuga, such sacrifices don't have the efficacy. The qualification of the brahmanas is diminished, and therefore the efficacy of such sacrifices is missing. What to speak of the transcendental aspect that such sacrifices are not designed and cannot give? But because we're so fortunate, we've had your association, now we're drinking the intoxicating nectar of the lotus feet of Govinda, that is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Similarly, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, not only those that are sakam karma personalities, same as the introductory or invocation verses, even Sutta Goswami, Shukadeva Goswami, that already liberated soul relishes such messages. I'm just doing this because it's how the Puranas work. The philosophy is embedded within the history. And if one has the proper guidance, one can extract the essence from the history. It just makes it relishable, easy, you know. You can sit and listen to stories for a long time, and sitting and listening to philosophy, it's more challenging. But the philosophy is there within the history. That's the point. It's illustrating the teaching. It makes it easier to understand the teaching because it's illustrated. And then there's some discussion in Prabhupada's purport about the selection of Naimisharanya. And here's what Prabhupada writes. Second paragraph of the purport. In the Vayavya Tantra, it is said that Brahma, the engineer of this particular universe, contemplated a great wheel which could enclose the universe. Within his mind, he just contemplated it. The hub of his great circle was fixed at a particular place known as Naimisharanya. So, one reading of that is Naimisharanya is the hub of the universe. Just like, you know, the earth rotates on an axis. Of course, it's, what is it, 23.5 degrees tilt from vertical. So, that's the axis of the earth planet upon which it spins. It's not like it's a physical pole going through the earth from top to bottom. It sticks out the top and says, that's the North Pole and that's the South. But it's an axis. So similarly, there's an axis upon which the universe spins. And the hub of that axis is Naimisharanya, passes through Naimisharanya. That's one of the readings. And then another, that's in this Vayavira Tantra, similar to the Vayavira Tantra, is the Vayu Purana. So I'm going to read that one. Quoted in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Brahma created a wheel in his mind. The rim of a wheel is called N-E-M-I, Nemi. The rim of a wheel is called Nemi. that place where the rim, Nemi, fell off, Shiryate, Nemi, Shiryate, Naimisha is in its compacted form, is called a Naimisha or Naimisha. Here is the Vayu Purana description. Translation, quote, "This mental wheel created by me will be released. The place where the rim comes off will be favorable for performing austerities. Having said this, and having created the wheel, brilliant like the sun in his mind and offering his respects to it, Brahma released that great deity, the wheel. The rejoicing Brahmanas offered respects to the Lord of the universe, then journeyed to the place where the rim of the wheel fell off. That forest, Aranya, became known as Naimisha and is worshipped by the sages." So they went to that place because it's the hub of the universe, and whatever beneficial work is done in one place goes to the whole universe because it's being performed in that hub of the universe, a sacred place, with a special feature to Naimisharanya. And the other is this Vayu Purana description, where the benediction was given by Brahma that where the rim fell, it would be beneficial for performance of austerities. And then a third is found in the Varaha Purana, where the following is described. Translation. "Having done that, the Lord then spoke to Goromukha, the powerful demon, was killed in that forest or Aranya. Quickly, in a moment, or Nimisha. Thus, this place is called Naimisharanya. It will be very suitable for Brahmanas in the future." That is, the enemies, the demons called material desires within our heart, are quickly dissipated by performance of austerities in Naimisharanya. So they were interested in relieving themselves from the influence of the age of Kali, and similarly extending that benefit to others who would be affected adversely by the age of Kali. Nice. Naimisharanya was selected. So this is the beginning. The sages were assembled, and now they're ready to begin the sacrifice. In the purport, Prabhupada, without using the word satam, he refers to the qualification of these sages, because we heard in the invocation verses that those who are satam can readily understand the message of Bhagavatam. So there are two qualifications. We mentioned that satam, nirmatsaranam, satam, their hearts are free from envy. In this case, at least the reading that the sages in Naimisharanya were interested in sakam karma, it was a default position because they hadn't had the association of sutta, or one who knows pure devotional service. Many, many examples like this in scripture of King Pachinibhari, when he's speaking to Narada, and Narada's explaining him the futility of fruitive activities. King Pachinibhari said, "How come the Brahmanas who have been engaging me in these fruitive activities never told me these things? What you're saying is very clear. Although I was having difficulty hearing because I was attached. Now by your association, it's very clear. How come we wasn't told these things before? So someone may be very capable. You know, we meet many, many people. Even they're attached to something or other that's in this worldly realm of, you know, the allure of happiness, so-called happiness. Through the association of those who've had this contact with this wonderful message of Srimad Bhagavatam, amazing things can happen. And sometimes it happens very quickly. Sometimes it happens slowly. But the potency is there, not by us, but in the message itself. It's very powerful. So we just try to assimilate the message and try to represent the message properly by our conduct and by our speech. And it's powerful. That's what our life is, doing those things that I just described. So the sages weren't envious, but the second thing, their qualification of satam, is that they're interested in seeing that a civilization or society of persons who live in this God-centered way somehow strive for that, to see if for that to become established in this world. This world of darkness gets some light. That's their wish. So here's how Prabhupada writes. Forgetful men do not know the right path for peace and prosperity. However, the sages knew it well, and therefore for the good of all men, they are always anxious to perform acts which may bring about peace in the world. They are sincere friends of all living entities, and at the risk of great personal inconvenience, they are always engaged in the service of the Lord for the good of all people. So here's the satam qualification. Because the next thing that I'm going to go to is, besides the scene, what's the qualification of a receiver? Satam, mentioned already in the invocation verses. Not envious. Maybe misguided, but not envious. And social activist, using the modern term, wishing to do something to make this a better God-centered place. And they're properly guided because they have received that message in a proper manner. Prabhupada writes, the modern materialistic society is detached from its relation to the Supreme Lord, and all plans being made by atheistic leaders are sure to be baffled at every step. Yet, they do not wake up to this. Sounds like the presidential election. Etc. And all the other versions of it. I'll make you happy. I've got a plan. I've got a better plan than the other guy. Baffled. What's the real plan? Here's the real plan. So, next is this description, starting with satam. What are the qualifications of a hearer, a receiver of the Bhagavatam? So, the first one, or the next one mentioned is the sages duly offered appropriate respect to Suta Goswami, having the capacity, the willingness, the culture to offer respect to a qualified person amongst them. Shaunaka, he is a descendant of Bhrigu, and he's very elderly. He's up there. But he, along with the other sages, honored Suta, who was younger and not of the same gotra. But he had heard from Shukadeva Goswami. So they elevated him to a position of respect. One day after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Suta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries. So there's a third, being inquisitive, Brahma Jigyasa, or Satyam Param Dhimahi, being inquisitive in the Absolute. They made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. So the Sanskrit word used in the verse is sat kritam. They offered due respect. And the final word in the verse is adarat. They offered their regard. So that's, in one sense, that's just culture. But it was, in their case, they were not only cultured, it was from the heart. It wasn't just a behavior. There's a distinction I'm making here between consciousness and behavior. Because it's a phrase that I use sometimes. We're not the International Society for Behavior Modification Incorporated. We're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So when consciousness is correct or purified, then behaviors will flow from that. And it doesn't have to be, you know, somebody standing over you to make sure that you're doing it, like a child. You know, I've noticed, at least in some cases, when I move about, like the children are playing and all of a sudden they're quiet at least 30 seconds. And then it's party time. So something like Prahlad Maharaj in the school of Sandandamarkha, when they left the classroom, it was party time. The kids just wanted to play. Because that's what kids wanted to do anyway. They just wanted to play in the absence of Sandandamarkha. So they didn't have that quality. They just wanted to play. And Prahlad took another role and said, no. Now, komarat acharat pragyo dharman bhagavatan iha. In this tender age of childhood, we should take very seriously the practice of hearing about Krishna and engaging in service to Krishna. And when one is elevated, whether it's a child or teenager or young adult or old person, the real sign of maturity is not what your behaviors are, but what your consciousness is. And because Prahlad was honored by the demigods for his pure Krishna consciousness, it shows. Like here, Shaunaka is honoring Suta for his qualification, offering due regard, offering due respect, inquiring, having an interest beyond their own little program, but being interested in the welfare of all. And then next comes the qualifications of the speaker. So right in the purport of text number 5, Prabhupada presents this first qualification of a speaker. Goswami. Goswami means one who has control of their senses. And then Prabhupada elaborates, control of the senses, it goes on the positive and the negative. They positively do not stray from the path of the previous acharyas. And the negative is they don't deliver lectures capriciously, like, you know, this means that. Interpretation and speculation. Rather, very carefully, transparently, they receive and they pass on in a very careful and responsible and conscientious way, not in a whimsical, capricious way. There's a vocabulary word for you two guys. Capricious? Don't know what it means, right? You do? You don't? Okay. Capricious means whimsical. You know what whimsical means? Yes? Like, ha 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 ha, that's whimsical. And capricious is the same thing as whimsical. There's no good reason for anything, you're just willy-nilly. Capricious, whimsical. So a qualified speaker has control of their senses, and they purposely extend their senses for the Lord's service, and not just whimsically do things, say things. And they stay on the path given by the previous acharyas. That's the first one that's mentioned in the purport of text number 5. Then the next one is mentioned in text number 6. They're anagha, or free from vices. The translation reads, the sages... Now, so very quick, fast forward. The sages are now speaking to Suta. He's on this elevated seat, and the sages say, respected Suta Goswami, you are completely free from all vice. We're offering our respect to you because, so from the receiver's side, respect, and from the speaker's side, worthy of respect. What's that qualification of the speaker? Free from all vice. We recognize you for that qualification. Then the next one. You are well versed in all the scriptures, famous for religious life and in the Puranas and the histories as well, for you have gone through them under proper guidance and have also explained them. So, Aditani is the next qualification. Learned it in the scriptures. And Prabhupada's commentary matches what the verse says. The varieties of scriptures, or Prabhupada is very explicit, where both the, he uses the word physical and metaphysical. No, the practical application in this world. Or, you know, how to do things in such a way it's consistent or harmonious with, infidelity with the message of the scriptures. How do you live your life according to theistic conduct in practical terms? And at the same time, make the connection between the soul and the supreme. Say, metaphysical, beyond the physical, the spiritual. So the spiritual aspect, but practically applied in daily affairs. You, Suta Goswami, have that qualification. Akyatani means explained. Aditani is well read. And Prabhupada comments, this is like a bonus. He says the way that one can best understand something is not just by reading something, but by hearing and then explaining something. Now, those of you that are conducting, I'm looking at Amrita Nanda now, you and others that are conducting classes can verify the following. It's one thing to read. It's another thing to be part of a group where you're hearing and discussing. It goes up. And then when you're in the position where you have to, after having heard and discussed, you're presenting to others and explaining it to others, you learn more than anybody else in the class. You learn more than you did when you read it, and you learn more than what you did when you participated in just hearing it, when you need to present. So part of the format, at least one option, is not just hearing, like we're doing right now, but in smaller groups, because then it's not... To do it in a large group like this would be chaotic, but in a smaller group, when you have a study group, you have discussion. It helps assimilate the message through discussion. And when you take the position, just even participating in a group discussion or the facilitator of a group discussion, you learn. So they're saying to Sutta is you've done all that. You've heard it, but not only you heard it, you understood it. But not only you've understood it, you've assimilated it. And not only that, you've explained it. So your realization has even further increased. So these are qualifications of a speaker. Text 7, we're almost done, just two more verses. Text 7, they say to Sutta Goswami, being the eldest learned Vedantist, O Sutta Goswami, you are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of Godhead, and you also know other sages who are fully versed in all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge. So the term that's used in this verse is para-vara-vid. Vid means to know, and para-vara, that you know the transcendental and you know the worldly, metaphysical and the physical. And you have association with those who are similarly qualified as you are similarly qualified. That helps one further become qualified, further assimilate the message through discussion not only with those that are not at all experienced, but in the association of those that are experienced. Yes, like peer association. So those that are doing the teaching programs here, as far as I understand, from time to time you have gatherings where you're not only sharing how do we accomplish the task given to us, and you divide up, you know, the duties of I'll take this group, that group, the other group, but sharing your realizations of how to make the presentation effective and so on. Doing like that helps to increase the devotee relationships and the loving exchanges amongst devotees, but also it deepens your realization of the subject matter. And Krishna likes it. And if Krishna likes it, if Krishna smiles, you're doing the right thing. In the purport for text 7, Prabhupada, I'll read. Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentation on Brahma Sutra. It is called natural because Vyasadeva is the author of both Vedanta Sutra and Srimad Bhagavatam, or the essence of all Vedic literatures. Then he goes in the compare and contrast direction. Besides Vyasadeva, there are other sages who are authors of six different philosophical systems, namely Gotama, Kanada, Kapila, Patanjali, Jaimini, and Ashtavakra. Theism is explained completely in the Vedanta Sutra, whereas, guess, it's atheism. In other systems of philosophical speculations, practically no mention is given to the ultimate cause of all causes. So those six vadas or doctrines are atheistic doctrines, all six of them. When Jiva Goswami was wishing to go to Vrindavan to be with his two uncles, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami first went to Navadvip, because other than when he was a small infant, which he couldn't remember, he had no association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the time he was old enough to travel, had gone. Lord Nityananda was still present. So he went to Navadvip to see the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And lo and behold, Lord Nityananda was there to greet him and took him to all the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And then Lord Nityananda blessed him, as he did with Krishnadas Kaviraj. He blessed Jiva Goswami. You make your residence in Vrindavan and simply live under the care of your two uncles, Rupa and Sanatan. But before you go there, go first to Benares or Varanasi, where there is a devotee of Lord Chaitanya named Madhusudana Vachaspati, and he will train you in these six atheistic doctrines. Why would a little young man want to get trained in atheistic doctrines? And Prabhupada explains, as it happened with Jiva Goswami's writings. He knew the Purva Paksha. He knew the contrary arguments, and he knew where the holes were in them because Madhusudana Vachaspati taught him. So when he went to Vrindavan and there was writing the Sandarbhas or his other writings expounding the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he knew in advance what the opposition would say and where the holes were in what the opposition would say. So he was equipped to present, you know, checkmate. Not only forwards, but backwards too. Here's what Prabhupada writes. One can sit on the Vyasasan only after being conversant in all the systems of philosophy so that one can present fully the theistic views of the Bhagavatam in defiance of all other systems. Srila Sutta Goswami was the proper teacher, and therefore the sages of Naimisharanya elevated him to the Vyasasana. Srila Vyasadeva is designated herein as the personality of Godhead because he is the authorized, empowered incarnation. So, in the, at least from time to time, there are courses that are offered at the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education and the MIHE and other places where they teach what these six doctrines are. Not for the purpose so that we can get trained up and be impersonalists or atheists, because they're atheistic. But so we know where their flaws are. We know what they are. And when someone presents them, we're not bewildered. Hey, well, wait a minute. What's that? I never saw that one before. So even Krishna speaks in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam to his father about one of those six, the Karma Vimamsa philosophy by Jaimini. Yes? In the Govardhan Lila, he says to his father, no need to worship Indra. He's presenting atheistic philosophy to his father, where he says, we don't need to depend on Indra. Indra is bound by our good works. If we do good works, he supplies our necessities. If we don't do good works, he doesn't supply our necessities. So all we need to do is do good works. We don't need to worship Indra. But rather, because we're dependent upon Govardhan Hill, let us worship Govardhan Hill. Take all these ingredients and make wonderful preparations and offer to Govardhan Hill, thus depriving Indra of the Indra Yagya, which is part of the Karma Kanda rituals, which is part of the Jaimini's teaching, just do good works. Karma is supreme. And the logic goes, if there's a God or not a God, it really doesn't matter. Because if there is a God, he is obliged by a higher principle of karma. You do good karma, he dispenses. You do bad karma, he doesn't dispense. So above God is karma. It's just do good karma. And if there's no God, you don't worry about it anyways. Clever. And he based, Jaimini based his teachings on the Vedas. It's a rendering of the Vedas that's atheistic. And then there's five other kinds. Prabhupada said that these are ancient, practically primordial, and anything that anybody says today is nothing new. It's just one of those six, or a mix of those six. Like the Gautama as one, whose theory is atomic theory. And it's what modern scientists are saying today. It's not new. Because, you know, read Gotama's teachings. Maybe some of them did, I don't know. And it's what's supreme? Matter. The primary building block of matter is the atom, and that's it. You don't need God in the picture just because there's matter and the laws that govern matter, and there's nothing else. And anybody that has this wishy-washy, sentimental, dumb idea that there's God, we reject it because there's only one thing. We can explain everything through one thing. There's matter and the laws that govern matter. That's it. Mechanistic science today. It's not new. It's Gotama's teachings. And in his teachings, there's references that say this is this and that's that because of this Vedic reference. So, Sutta was conversant. He heard from Shukadeva Goswami. He also knew the other stuff. So they wanted to hear from him. For what reason? For the benefit of all mankind and for their upliftment. From their limited position of just knowing the Karmakanda rituals and not having the whole picture that Sutta had. Last verse for this seminar. Text 8. And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, you can tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them. So there's two more qualifications mentioned in this verse. One is soumya. Soumya means one who is pure and simple. And that's a spiritual qualification. Not contaminated and complicated and crooked. Pure and simple. Soumya. Qualification of a speaker. And snigdha. Snigdha means one who is submissive. Very similar to pranipat. Is submission. So one who is snigdha is one who is submissive. That is, he's had the association, by the way, the spiritual masters is mentioned as plural. So from your spiritual masters, you've heard, but because you're submissive, you received. And because you've received not only information, but their mercy, you are now qualified to pass that which you've received, namely mercy, onto others. So we're very eager to hear from you. So that's a qualification of a hearer, is eagerness or inquisitiveness. Eagerness and inquisitiveness to understand, to receive. And that's the end. Because the next, text 9, starts with the questions. There's 6 questions posed by the sages. And that's a whole other topic that begins with text 9 and goes through the rest of the first chapter. So we're done. Any discussion? Comments? Yes? The Bhagavatam is very nice, huh? Yes.
Thank you for the wonderful session. So the question is, we have heard in Chaitanya Charitamrita that if we hear Mayavadi Bhashya, then it is dangerous for our spiritual life. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we are supposed to also learn about it so that we can argue or defend as necessary. Mm-hmm. So how to reconcile these two guidances?
No problema. when you hear, from Lord Chaitanya or someone in the line of the Sifth Succession from Lord Chaitanya, then one is not contaminated by that. Right in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a whole discussion and of Prakashananda Saraswati laying out in his discussion with Lord Chaitanya, Mayavad philosophy, right in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in the purport, Prabhupada goes into it in detail. And then he shows where the holes are. Because one is hearing that from an associate of Lord Chaitanya, then it's protection. It's not contamination. Someone asked a similar, in relation to the rasa question, someone asked a similar question later, yesterday evening, about Prabhupada's cautions about hearing from the 10th canto before previously hearing the first 9 cantos. Again and again, that caution is given. And then, in contrast, or seeming in contradiction, Prabhupada provided Krishna book. And he had us mass distribute Krishna book to persons who hadn't read the first 9 cantos. So, wouldn't they make the gross mistake of misunderstanding Krishna's pastime because they haven't been qualified to receive the knowledge of Krishna's pastimes? Same kind of question. Different application, but same kind of question. There is risk, so why undergo the risk? So the answer Prabhupada personally gave, he said that he didn't know if he would live to complete the entire Srimad Bhagavatam into the 10th canto and finish it to the 12th canto. So he took a time out and made a presentation of Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto in such a way that worldly people could be somewhat prepared, not the same as having read the entire first 9 cantos, but somewhat prepared to not hold on to some misunderstandings. And he did that through his explanation. So it wasn't just a straight translation. It was a, he called it a summary study. And then he explained another circumstance. A summary study means I can do what I want. Meaning what he wanted to do was provide that very confidential information or understanding or knowledge to unqualified people in such a way they wouldn't make horrible mistakes in misunderstanding. So similarly, with hearing Mayavad philosophy or the 6 doctrines or the other side, Krishna's pastimes, without being previously qualified. Hear from the right source. Then one's protected. Something else? Yes?
Hello, sir. So, is there any authoritative source to learn the 6 sandarbhas?
About the 6 what?
The 6 schools of thought.
6 course?
Schools, like the
doctrines.
Doctrines. You want to know where you can learn them? I gave you 2 references, the VIHE and MIHE. They have books where you can, you know, but better you hear the recordings, or better you go and take the classes. Better to have a teacher than just read a book. But those are places where they teach those things. There's probably others that I'm not aware of, but those are 2 that I'm aware of. And good chance they'll have prerequisites. Before we will teach you this course, or any students who want to take this course, must have previously accomplished something or other. I'm guessing they have something like that. Someone else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.